This is Talk is Cheap on KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peace Works Independent Community Radio. Today on Talk is Cheap, Mordecai Vanunu is the guy that betrayed the Israeli nuclear weapons program, the worst kept secret in the world that, another voice unheard about is about the nuclear weapons program in Israel. They've had them for years and have never admitted it. So I used the casual historian to give you some basic background, and of course I shortened it up because basically the history of it, they actually tried to stop, Israelis tried to stop Israel from getting nuclear weapons all since the Truman administration. There's a little bit of a kind of key moments in it here, and I did a news story on it, so that's a quick overview. So I'm going to play the news story for you. Then, like I say, a bunch of highlights. There's also, I didn't report the honey trap. There was a honey trap to capture this guy, and so there's a rabbi. It's very there isn't much on Mordecai Vanunu because he's censored. So there's a rabbi that is, and they are discussing and the ethicality of the honey trap. And one thing I just want to make clear is, this is nothing against Jews or Israelis, but what they are saying, and it's true, is I agree, I can see where they say this, is Jewish Israel and the Jews cannot depend on the world for their security. So that's why they felt they needed the bomb. And I just want to say, just like all of us, that's amazing, you know, that you're willing, just like the U.S. and Russia and the world, it's amazing that we are willing to destroy ourselves over religion and money, basically. So I just thought I'd say that. And whatever, a few shout-outs. Don't forget to check out your local comedy open mic. You might see me there. At the very end, I played this song called New Toy. It's a live version of New Toy by Thomas Dolby and Lena Lovitch. I didn't realize Thomas Dolby was in Lena Lovitch even. Of course, that is Thomas Dolby. It makes sense now. Didn't realize that. And that song is about commercialism, really. But they're specifically talking about a certain toy in the song, but it's really about commercialism. And let's face it, nuclear weapons, nuclear missiles, they're just another toy. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media. We're doing our pledge drive right now, so please become a sustaining member if you can, or just send a buck or two. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media. If I didn't say that already, support independent media. Rooftop solar, rooftop solar, rooftop solar. Oh, and one other thing. I'm sorry. You know, what? Another story that I'm working on. First of all, next week looks like I've got stuff on the Zapatistas for next week, hopefully. One thing I'm working on is I'm still looking for the shutdown procedure for the hospital here in Eugene. They shut down the hospital, and the Oregon Hospital Association wrote the shutdown procedure. And I used to design fire alarms, and, you know, the fire marshal and the insurance companies and the manufacturers sit on those boards. So I'd like to find out who was on the board that wrote the shutdown procedure for the Eugene Hospital and only basically said that they needed to do something with the insurance records and didn't worry about replacing the hospital in any way for any length of time, basically. So that's something I'm looking into. If anybody knows, can figure that out. So, again, thanks for listening. Tell your friends. KEPW, LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peterson Works, Independent Community Radio.
Now is a time of great decision. Are we to stay or up and quit? There's no avoiding this conclusion. Our town is turning into it.
Be seated.
In a recent installment of Counterspin, Janine Jackson noted that not all groups are able to weigh in on conflicts like the Middle East.
Listeners know that the response to the current violence on Gaza, the massive killings and displacement, what response you believe in has to do with your understanding of what's happening and why. And that depends on who you're hearing from, who you're told to believe. Who gets to speak is always a key question about U.S. news media coverage of what we call foreign policy. But that doesn't just mean which officially credentialed policy experts, but which human beings, which communities get to not just be quoted, but shape the conversation. And now, as always, U.S. corporate media's insistence that power speaks and those affected get to comment maybe is trying to win the day.
She was talking about Voices for Peace. Another voice that is not heard in relation to Israel is the anti-nuclear weapons movement. Possibly the most famous of those voices is Mordechai Vanunu. Vanunu, a former Israeli nuclear technician, spent 18 years in prison, 11 of which were in solitary confinement, for betraying the secret of Israel's nuclear weapons program. He has been subjected to various restrictions on his speech and his movement and arrested several times for giving interviews to foreign journalists and attempting to leave Israel. He's nominated yearly for the Nobel Peace Prize, as heard here when nominated in 2004 by Irish peace activist Mairead Maguire.
I have already nominated Mordechai for next year's Nobel Peace Prize, and I hope very much that he will receive it.
We are going to arrange a conference by the peace activists, the anti-nuclear weapons in Israel, Israelis and Arabs, and we want to invite people from all over the Middle East state, from Egypt, Jordan, foreigners from United States, Europe, and to start really make a plan how to make the Middle East free from nuclear weapons, especially Israel, because the only state to have atomic bomb is Israel. And we hope that this will be the beginning of a real initiative to open the way to make Israel a nuclear-free zone.
Israel has maintained a state of nuclear ambiguity to this day, not admitting they have as many as 400 nuclear weapons. The world agrees nuclear deployment in such an historically religious hotbed area toys with Armageddon. Leaders maintain this ruse in the hope that states around Israel won't pursue nukes on their own and will be content procuring the latest conventional weapons from their allies instead. Voices for Peace is only one example of mass media suppression of alternative ideas. Anti-nuclear voices like Vanunu that point out the fragile state of nuclear brinksmanship our leaders have left us in also continue to be suppressed. For KPW News, I'm DJ Susti.
In October of 1945, David Ben-Gurion visits the concentration camp at Bergen-Belsen, looking for able-bodied survivors who might be willing to come to Palestine to fight for Jewish independence. At the camps, he sees the horrors of the Holocaust firsthand, the barbed wire fences, the gas chambers, and the mass graves. As he looks upon this, his mind thinks back to events 2 months earlier. The United States had finally put an end to the war by using the most powerful weapon mankind had ever seen. Weapons so awesome, they caused their creator to forever repeat the lines,
"Now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds."
As he looked upon his emaciated tribesmen, he thinks to himself, "If our people had possessed these weapons, this would have never happened. If we get possession of these weapons, it will never happen again." Israel's nuclear weapons program is the worst-kept secret of geopolitics. Everybody knows it's there, but nobody publicly acknowledges it, which is the way everybody wants it. Everybody knowing it exists gives Israel the ultimate deterrent against nation-states who have sworn to destroy it, while not officially acknowledging its existence gives the hostile regimes in the region an excuse to not pursue their own programs in retaliation. Now, exactly when David Ben-Gurion first contemplated building an atomic bomb is unknown, though some evidence suggests that it may have been as early as 1945. A careful reading of his diaries and other writings suggests that the connection between the Holocaust and the ultimate weapon was etched into his consciousness during his visit to the killing fields. The Jews in Mandate Palestine were outnumbered by the Arabs within, as well as by the Arab states surrounding them. But Ben-Gurion believed that science could compensate us for what nature had denied us in terms of resources and raw materials. Israel is the only state in the region, other than Jordan and Lebanon, that has no oil. It has precious little water as well as no minerals to speak of, apart from potash and phosphates. Nuclear power, therefore, was seen as a necessary option for a country bereft of natural resources and beset by danger. But Ben-Gurion couldn't do this alone. To pull it off, he would need some help.
I'm putting a team together. So what's the job? I'm going to use nukes to prevent another Holocaust. You son of a bitch, I'm in.
In the 1940s, British geologists made reports about possible oil and phosphate deposits in the Negev Desert. The rumors of oil were quickly dismissed, but the phosphates were real and are a potential source of uranium. After Israel declared independence in 1948, the Science Corps was established, and within the Science Corps, Hemed C was set up to handle nuclear physics. And during the war, Ben-Gurion sent a team to investigate and secure the phosphate fields in the Negev, ordered to prevent the military from having enough to achieve its nuclear ambitions. In December of 1953, David Ben-Gurion decides to take a break from politics, resigning from the positions of Prime Minister and Minister of Defense, leaving them in the hands of Moshe Sharet and Pinhas Levon, the latter of which was skeptical of the nuclear program and began to dismantle it. Levon was among those who believed that a nuclear program was a waste of money when the IDF was struggling to get the conventional arms it needed to fight off Arab attacks. In January 1954, he announced the closure of the physics department of Emmet and that its resources would be given to the Weizmann Institute, who also recruited many of Emmet's scientists into its own ranks. However, Levon's plans would be disrupted by a scandal. In July of 1954, an Israeli intelligence cell in Egypt was discovered. Egyptian Jews were recruited to sabotage American and British cultural institutions in Egypt and make it look like Egyptian nationalists were doing it, thus fraying relations between the Egyptian and Western governments, and hopefully delay British handover of the Suez Canal. An investigation into these activities would be inconclusive over who was in charge of the cell and who gave it orders to target American and British assets. But the scandal, which became known as the Levon Affair, would force him to resign as Minister of Defense in early 1955, at which point Moshe Sharet asks Ben-Gurion to come out of retirement, which he does, and he immediately began undoing Levon's policies and getting the nuclear program back up and running. Back in 1954, the U.S. government unveiled its new peace initiative, Atoms for Peace. The plan was for the U.S. government to dissuade countries around the world from developing nuclear weapons by offering U.S. assistance in creating nuclear power plants, on the condition that they don't pursue nuclear weapons. Upon Ben-Gurion's return, he reached out to the U.S. in order to acquire a nuclear reactor. Dr. Bergman would meet with the head of the U.S. Atomic Energy Commission, Admiral Louis L. Strauss, and asked if Israel would be allowed to use the reactor to produce small quantities of plutonium, to which Strauss told him no. After this encounter, the U.S. would become wary and suspicious of the Israelis and insisted on strict American supervision. In the talks between Meir, Kissinger, and Nixon, they came to the conclusion that the U.S. accepted that Israel had nukes and that the U.S. would stop sending inspectors to Dimona. Israel, in turn, would follow the three no's: no acknowledgement, no testing, and no provoking the Arabs with it. Nixon also promised that, so long as he was president, Israel would never be left weak in conventional arms.
But Israel's policy of nuclear ambiguity is what prevents Benunu from ever being fully freed.
If Israeli authorities were to do so, that would be a tacit admission of Israel possessing nuclear weapons, which it had made agreements with the U.S. to not reveal.
Additionally, as mentioned earlier, the benefits of the status quo is that everybody knowing it exists gives Israel the desired deterrent power of a nuclear weapon, while nobody officially acknowledging it grants cover for the hostile regimes in the area to not have to pursue their own nuclear program.
If the programs were officially acknowledged, many of the regimes in the region would be under pressure from their own populations to start programs of their own. During a press conference in Munich back in 2004, a Palestinian journalist asked U.S. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld what he believed to be a gotcha question that would both demonize Israel and label the American government as hypocrites. Mr. Secretary, you talked about countries that were trying to produce weapons of mass destruction. Why do you remain silent in regard to Israel? To which Rumsfeld responded,
"You know the answer before I give it, I'm sure. The world knows the answer. We take the world like you find it. And Israel is a small state with a small population. It's a democracy, and it exists in a neighborhood that in many, over a period of time, has opined from time to time that they'd prefer it not be there. And they'd like it to be put in the sea. And as a result, over a period of decades, it has arranged itself so it hasn't been put in the sea."
So in general, what... Mordechai Benunu, this really shouldn't be taped this year, but okay. Mordechai Benunu has been in the news recently, and Mordechai Benunu has been calling for Israel to let him leave. Why is he asking Israel to let him leave? Well, who's Mordechai Benunu? So if you Wikipedia, even though they always say not to trust things you read on Wikipedia, but for this case, Wikipedia, I'm just going to read a little bit. Wikipedia, Mordechai Benunu was born in 1954, also known as John Crossman. He was a nuclear technician who worked in Dimona. And citing his opposition to weapons of mass destruction, he began to reveal details of Israel's nuclear weapons program in 1986. And our purpose is... What happened is that in 1986, after he had sold the story, I'm just looking here, there's like 20 pages on Wikipedia. It's very interesting to read. But I hope you didn't just get caught on camera wearing that.
Yes, he did.
at least I'll have a little bit of an understanding of what I'm dealing with here. You ain't seen nothing yet at the Bayou, okay? So, it was back and forth, etc. Fine. Supposedly, he actually renounced whatever it means. He renounced his Yiddishkeit at some point before that. Even though you can't really do that, but he went to Bnei Akiva Yeshiva High School. He went through the IDF, etc. And in the early 1980s, he converted whatever that means to Christianity. Between 1976 and 1985, he was at the Negev Nuclear Research Center in Dimona, south of Dimona, and he would research, develop, and manufacture nuclear weapons. Obviously, none of this was public. And again, in the beginning of early September 1986. So he flew to London in violation of his non-disclosure agreement, and he met with the Sunday Times, and he basically gave them a lot of information. They didn't want him to appear in public before they published the story, which was published on October 5th, 1986. And before then, he was somehow, without anybody knowing, he was captured the week before it was published. How exactly he was captured is the discussion for this evening. What they wanted to do is they didn't want to capture him on British soil because they had a good relationship with Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, and they didn't want any confrontations with the British intelligence, and therefore they had to figure out how to get him to leave the UK. How do you get him to leave the UK? So that's where Cindy came in. So Cindy, is anybody, you're familiar with the story a little bit? It's fascinating. You're not familiar with the story? You know Cindy?
I read it this afternoon.
Oh, you read it this afternoon. Okay. He doesn't know Cindy. So Cindy.
The rabbi knows Cindy?
I do not know Cindy. She's way before my time. Cindy's name is Cheryl Ben Tove. She was born in 1960. And she's currently actually supposedly lives in Orlando. She's an American real estate agent. So she became well known in 1986. When under the name Cindy, she went to London. She got Mordechai Benunu to come to Rome. Where, if you read the story, you watch any of the movies, I think it's quite fascinating. Where she brought him in Rome to a small apartment in the old quarter of the city. There were Mossad operatives waiting there. They gave him paralyzing drugs. They had to sneak him out and put him onto a ship. He was brought back to Israel, where he was sentenced to 18 years in jail. He spent 11 of those years in solitary confinement, which is quite fascinating. Obviously, they're still worried to this day that he's going to reveal some information. He was released in 2004, and uh, he uh, He's restricted with his speech, his movement. He's been thrown in jail numerous times because he's met with various people. Actually, he just got married 2 months ago. He got married. He lives in the church, I believe. He lives in the church in Jerusalem, in one of the churches in Jerusalem. It's in the church. I have it here in the article. He lives in a church in Jerusalem. And, so he was in the news last week because he wants to leave now to visit Norway, I believe, which is where his wife that he just married is from. And they're not letting him leave again. He's supposed to be up in September. At some point, they're supposed to have another hearing in the Israeli Supreme Court to let him leave. That's the story of Mordechai Vanunu. What's interesting is that Cheryl Bentov, otherwise known as Cheryl Hannon, who's with Cindy, so she was born in America, she grew up in Pennsylvania and in Orlando, and she spent a semester in high school studying in Israel. She joined the Israeli army. She got married, which is very important for our discussion today. She got married in 1985, right before this, and then in 1986 she was recruited and she was trained by the Mossad, and she was the one who again helped abduct Mordechai Vanunu. So that's the story of Mordechai Vanunu. There's another story which may or may not be well known. It's again fascinating just to do a little bit more reading on Mordechai Vanunu and on Cindy Cheryl. There's another lady named Shalamis Cohn. Anybody hear of Shalamis Cohn? If you know somebody named Shalamis Cohn, it's probably not her. Shalamis Cohn was born in 1920 in Argentina. She immigrated to Palestine in 1937. She got married soon thereafter, and again, she began working for the Mossad. Money was, they say, probably one of her motives. Before she started working, she was training in Tel Aviv, etc., etc. She was sent to London to learn English and to learn, quote-unquote, good manners and how to fish for men in troubled water, or how to fish for fish in troubled water. And she began working in Beirut in 1947. She sold sexual favors to hundreds of high government officials in Lebanon between 1947 and 1961 for 14 years. She helped bring Jews from Lebanon and other Arab countries to Israel. Through Lebanon, in 1950, she stole some of the security protocol between Syria and Lebanon, which they said definitely helped with the different wars that Israel had. And she was working for the Mossad the entire time. They provided her with all the equipment and all the cameras, etc. She was actually caught in 1961. She was caught after 14 years of spying, and she was sentenced to death. They then changed it to 20 years in jail, and in 1967, 6 years later, she was released in a secret prisoner exchange after the Six-Day War. You'll never believe where she lives. I don't know if she's still alive, but last I checked, she's still alive. You'll never believe where she lives. She actually lives in Mea Shearim, where they probably have no idea about anything of her past. So those are the... What?
Or maybe they do.
Probably not. So those are the histories, again, just in a very quick nutshell. I was actually surprised. I thought more people would have heard of them. Those are the histories of Cheryl Bentov, Cindy, and the history of Shula Cohn, and the history, again, of Mordechai Vanunu. And there are some others. Again, there's another discussion we could have about Eli Cohn. There's another Eli Cohn, who's the famous Israeli spy. That's a separate discussion. But what I want to do tonight, and we're not going to have time to discuss all of it, but I want to start the discussion. And thank you, Robert, for asking me, not last minute, but for asking me to give the shiur, even though there wasn't supposed to be a shiur tonight. So we quickly threw something together. Again, it's the beginning of a discussion. But what I want to discuss tonight is really this idea of Cindy. I want to discuss whether this was halachically permissible. After all, they were Mossad agents, very nice, but they are Jewish, and both of them were married. And the question becomes, is that a legitimate halachic thing to do, to act as a honey trap? If you Google honey trap, so honey trap is known, the honey trap definition of honey trap is this idea of using somebody to lure other people, to lure an enemy into the hands. And if you do so that is, that's officially what a honey trap is. I left my Tanakh in the office. A little bit of Tanakh. Is there a Tanakh here?
We're in issue?
Is there help there?
Is there an article?
You have to go to the church.
Here, this is the key to the office.
That's my office, which is the first office on the right.
No alarm, definitely no alarm. Okay, so the question is, are you allowed to engage in, to initiate and engage in illicit relations in certain cases when it's clear that That method is the quickest and most effective way of acquiring essential information about the enemy or stopping an attack that threatens the safety of our people. Obviously, just engage in illicit relations for no reason would be us, sir. The question is, in these cases where, again, seemingly there was some type of important information that was going to be gathered, would it be much? Now, I don't want to concentrate on these specific cases and say the Metzius. I don't want to talk about Metzius of these specific cases and argue whether or not Mordechai Venunu had information that we would consider to be extremely dangerous or not, and how important it was, and how much he would have shared. Because again, the article was published in the Times. You could see a copy of the article. But at the end of the day, it's hard to know exactly. And Israel still feels obviously that there's some information that he has, seemingly. So it's hard to know exactly what information he has and how important it was to capture him. So I don't want to talk about the Metzius and argue that what Cindy did was wrong, because at the end of the day, the information he had was not that important. We don't know for sure. Clearly, the Mossad felt that the information, even though the Mossad might have not been run by the halachic decision of Cindy, but at the end of the day, we cannot argue or actually know what information he did or didn't have. And until this day, we don't in fact know all the information that he did and didn't have.
Film, the Wednesday play. We always watch the Queen on Christmas Day. Won't you stay? Though your eyes see shipwrecked sailors, you're still dry. The outlook's fine, the whales might have some rain saved again. Time to be our guest. Name your prize. Drop of wine, a glass of beer, dear. What's the time? The grime on the time is mine, oh mine, oh mine. 9:05.
darkness in the spring. Streets of San Francisco, a word from Peking. The trouble was started by a young Errol Flynn. Better in my day, whoa, Lord. For when we got bored, we'd have a war, happy but poor. So let's skip the news, boy. I'm gonna make that tea.
This young fellow named Lodge had seatbelts installed in his Dodge. When his date was strapped in, he committed a sin without even leaving the garage. That's clever, isn't it?
Let's see. From March 1953 to June...
Oh. Albert, you have all the cranial capacity of a canary. Now, I'm going to recount these events of historical significance once again. Now, please, please try to assimilate them this time. World War III, hot and cold, lasted from June 1950 to March 1983, when the Vatican Armistice was signed between the Eastern and Western blocs, a total of 33 years. Is this too fast for you?
No, I'm right with you.
Oh, good. Now, World War IV lasted 5 days, just long enough for the final missiles to leave their silos on both sides. And what's left here, where once were homes and families and warm hearths.
Come on, Pete, would you get off my back, you mad dog?
Now, only desolation, civilization lies smothered and decaying under an ocean of mud belonging to anyone who's strong enough to dig and fight and take it for his own. God, that's dramatic. I like that. So, spread about us, the city of Phoenix, Arizona, where in 2006, 18-odd years ago, you managed to come into the world and we became associates. Now, let's hear that back.
What good's all this history crap gonna do me?
Just do the presidents.
Oh, God. Eisenhower, Truman.
Truman, Eisenhower.
Truman, Eisenhower. Kennedy. Johnson. Nixon. Ford. Kennedy. Kennedy. Kennedy.
Having trouble divining this one?
No.
Yeah.
Sis boom ba.
Sis boom ba.
Describe the sound made when a sheep explodes. What kind of social disease can you get from an octopus?
I hold in my hand the last envelope.
May your only son be caught in a gay swine stampede. I'm going to counter-almentate my aforementioned ingesta. How does William Buckley say, "I think I'm going to barf"?
They go before they blow.
About 6 miles. You should feel a hefty jolt.
I want a front row seat when these babies go.
I'll bet you do.
Lord, you have to eat that stuff in there. It stinks.
You never let up, do you?
Yeah. Oh, now you hurt his feelings.
I'd like to know what any one of you knows about real food.
Lord, what do you mean, real food? What, out of the dirt? That's real food, isn't it?
That's right. This happens to be nature's greatest gift.
To a celibate, maybe.
Go on, you guys. Maybe he knows something we don't. Hey, Lord, give me a slice of that cantaloupe, huh?
Hey, don't ask Lord for a slice. I'd be delighted to give you a slice of that cantaloupe.
Just sit down and shut up. Sit down, sit down, sit down! And shut up and leave me alone, all of you, now, and let me eat.
Hey, now, what's the big deal? I can't see the difference between that and this anyway.
You don't see the difference? The difference is that I grew it. That's what the difference is. That I picked it and I fixed it. And it has a taste and it has some color. And it has a smell. And that it calls back a time when there were flowers all over the earth. And there were valleys. And there were plains of tall green grass that you could lie down in, that you could go to sleep in. And there were blue skies. And there was fresh air. And there were things growing all over the place, not just in some domed enclosures blasted some millions of miles out into space. Look at that stuff. How can you guys sit there and really say anything to me about this? Look at this crap. Look at that. Dried synthetic crap. And you've become so dependent on it that I bet you can't even live without it.
What do we want, Olo?
Don't you realize how pitiful that is, what you just asked me? On Earth, everywhere you go, the temperature is 75 degrees. Everything is the same. All the people are exactly the same. Now, what kind of life is that?
Well, if it's so rotten, why do you want to go back?
Because it's not too late to change it.
What do you want, Lowell? I mean, there's hardly any more disease, there's no more poverty. Nobody's out of a job.
That's right. Every time we have the argument, you say the same thing to me. You give me the same three answers all the time. The same thing, well, everybody has a job. That's always the last one. But you know what else there is no more of, my friend? There is no more beauty. And there's no more imagination. And there are no frontiers left to conquer. And you know why? Only one reason why. One reason why. The same attitude that you three guys are giving me right here in this room today. And that is, nobody cares. Look on the wall behind you. Look at that little girl's face. I know you've seen it. But you know what she's never going to be able to see? She's never going to be able to see the
simple wonder of a leaf in her hand. Because there's not going to be any trees. Now you think about that.
Fact is, Lowell, if people were interested, something had been done a long time ago. You ready?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm ready. Hey, wait a minute.
I don't think you guys understand what this means. Please don't blow up the domes.
Which one first?
Outboard cluster first. Let's hit
but
six.
Well, you have the confidence that outboard cluster's enough.
Got any choice, Lowell.
It takes nukes.
But they're not replaceable.
Well, now you do. Brought to you by Gluteus Maximus Excon Cranium. Do you still think women and people of color are inferior? Do you think corporations care about people and the environment? Do you think George Bush doesn't know the lyrics to the Horse Vessel song? You may be suffering from terminal ignorance. Made from 100% Amanita mushrooms, Gluteus Maximus Excon Cranium actually removes the brain plaque associated with terminal ignorance. Pick up some today before it's too late. Side effects are compassion, forgiveness, and hysterical laughter.
There's a scourge threatening the airwaves right now. I'm talking about that earworm wrangler and rhyme criminal, Justin Bieber. I don't care if he gets his coke from Columbia, his product from Pennsylvania. He should be arrested just for rhyming holy with hold me. His music is vapid. His lyrics are trite. Now don't kill Justin Bieber. Cutting his hair will only slow him down. If you want to stop Justin Bieber and others like him, go to kepw.org and become a sustaining member, or just send a couple of dollars. We're all volunteers, so you get more bang for your buck. Go to kepw.org and stop inane music today.
Brought to you by Silt River Tree Museum and Casino. Built on the site where an actual ancient rainforest once stood, see a full-scale replica of a Douglas fir tree. See pictures of trees larger in diameter than a man is tall. Trout and salmon that once choked the rivers of the Northwest will sing to you in our chamber of taxidermy. Hear the disaffected sounds of Feller Buncher and his bunch of fellers, an all-ex-logger band, in our simulated wood amphitheater. Take the Oregon Desert Highway to the clear-cut road exit, turn right at the stump in the road, and you're at Silt River Tree Museum and Casino. Free parking, kids a buck and a half, closed during summer months due to melting asphalt, giant locusts, and methyl ethyl hydroxy colchicine slag emissions.
Love rap music, tired of defending it, man. And the wild thing about rap music, man, people either love it or hate it with a passion, man. Love it or hate it, man. Even the United States government hates rap. The government hates rap, man. You know why I say that? Because they don't arrest anybody that kills rappers. Oh. They don't got no clues, they don't got no suspects. They don't fill out a police report when it's a dead rapper. They don't even have a chalk line. If you want to get away with murder, all you got to do is shoot somebody in the head and put a demo tape in their pocket. This is a rap killing. Let's get out of here. The government hates rap. Look at all the rappers, man. Look at all the dead rappers. I miss all these motherfuckers. Biggie Smalls, man. Biggie Smalls, man. Biggie Smalls gunned down outside a party in Los Angeles. Now, Biggie weighed about 400 pounds, so they had to shoot him for a while. There was some reloading in that drive-by. It's like the bullet had to hit another bullet that went in before it just to really do damage. They don't got no clues, no suspects, a hamburger wrapper, nothing. Jam Master Jay, man. Jam, man. I miss Jay, man. I miss that motherfucker. Jam Master Jay. Gunned down in a recording studio in Queens, okay? They had surveillance footage of people coming in and out. They ain't arrest nobody. It's like the guy came in the studio, shot Jay, recorded an album, then left. They ain't get nobody. No clues, no suspects, not an old Adidas, nothing. Tupac Shakur, man. Tupac Shakur, man. Tupac gunned down on the Las Vegas Strip after a Mike Tyson fight. How many witnesses do you need to see a crime before you arrest somebody? More people saw Tupac get shot than the last episode of Seinfeld. And you know, every year, Tupac comes back from the dead, records a new album with clues in it. Every record got a clue if you listen real hard. The brother in the red shot me dead right there. Track four, Pac is trying to tell us something. Listen again, it was a nigga named Kevin with a Mac-11 right there. Pac is reaching out to us. Listen. The government hates rap, man. And only rappers get gunned down like this. Only rappers get gunned down, they don't get about it. And I tell you right now, if Billy Joel, Elton John, and David Bowie got shot, they'd have Bruce Springsteen's house surrounded. The government hates rap. And only the good rappers are dead. Only the good ones. Biggie dead. Tupac dead. Vanilla Ice still alive. The government hates rap. You mean to tell me they can find Saddam Hussein in a hole, but you can't tell me who shot Tupac? They found Saddam Hussein in Iraq. Tupac got shot in Vegas. Vegas! Not on no side street, the mug shot on the strip. In front of Circus! Damn!
How I rule the world today, how I corrupt they say, and absolute power corrupts you, absolutely. It can change a man who has a heart of gold, make him cruel, wicked, self-centered and cold. Many men in this land, many organizations, fought for freedom and justice throughout the land. When they have power and authority, they don't give a damn about nobody.
Hi, I'm Israel Danish for Yippie Helmet. You know, nature has a special way of protecting artificial and natural things. Here's an egg yolk. Look what nature has protected the egg yolk with. Nothing. Now, nature's real helmet, the natural helmet for the egg, is the calcium-lined calcium cover. Watch as policeman truncheon destroys egg. No good. Nature's helmet for the tomato, a bright red skin, is also valueless when the policeman's truncheon destroys it. Look at this. Squash. Everyone thinks the squash is a powerful and an ecstatic movement of vegetablehood. But yet, policeman's truncheon destroys nature's squash, eggplant. Eggplant is flexible, but brain damage has occurred inside. Death. Pumpkin. Closest thing to a human head. When this is brought in contact with a policeman's truncheon, watch what happens. And now the yippy head. Human's natural helmet concussion.
When they have power and authority, they don't give a damn about nobody. They prostitute in the island, milking the land dry. They making my people starve, exploiting, oppressing, less freedom, more suffering. This thing just can't go on. Think it over, my friend. Think it over.
We're doing a film about anarchism in America. Is there an anarchist influence in the anti-nuke movement?
No doubt about it. There's a lot. But it's manifested itself not so much in explicit opposition to the state as such, which is the most common form of anarchism, but in a way of operating that isn't centralist, where people who participate in these demonstrations and want to change their lives do so on a participatory basis rather than taking orders from central authorities. That's the way it tends to go. I mean, it's not that that's always successful, but there's that tendency towards decentralism, a tendency towards consensus operation, and at least from my perspective, a tendency to a strong nonviolent perspective, because I think the state is the ultimate violence. And so to see that nuclear power is violent, nuclear power is centralized, and we want to have a certain technology, we want to have another society where centralism of that sort, that authoritarianism, is dissolved and is more responsive to people's needs.
You can't block off the road?
We can't block off the road.
Oh, no, we're not going to block the road.
You don't understand. If we let you drive down there, we're going to have to let everybody else drive down there too, right? We can't have 1,000 cars down there.
You seem to have the power to do what you want.
No, we ain't doing what we're told to do.
You're going to take a chance on the cars being towed away.
Anarchist forms of organization would be a style of organizing that includes the input and decision-making of everyone who is affected, but also anarchist organizing and decision-making would involve people taking the results of their decisions directly and acting on them, rather than having somebody else do the work for them. That it's participatory in decision-making and in action. And that direct action element, which is embodied within many of the civil disobedience actions in the anti-nuclear movement, such as blocking construction of nuclear power plants.
This is a song that I used to do in the days when I was known as Lane Lovish, and it's called New Toy.
Did I ask you for your love? Did I ask you for your dedication? I don't want your love. I don't want your love.